The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Best Of Podcast.
It's got to be one of the best themes we have at all of ESPN. There's no doubt about it. It's great work because it's the Paul Feinbaum Show. But these sweet, sweet tones here are not Paul Feinbaum, no. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in for Paul, not just today, but for the rest of the week. You guys get to hang out with me. I'm as much fun as Paul is, at least in my own mind. 855-242-7285. Just remember, the only rule today, given my music background, is I want to know what your first concert was. Anytime you call in, what was your first concert? We're going to ask that of our guest here as we get into some deep college football. Like, there, it takes a level of bravery. I don't know. It takes a level of, I don't care what my mentions are going to look like. It takes a level of true strength to decide that you are willing to put out any sort of projections for 2022 already for the college football season. But that's exactly what Bill Connolly has done, ESPN staff writer. You can check it out there. It's out on ESPN Plus. And it's great work by Bill, as always. He joins us now. And Bill, before we get into any college football, what was your first concert, my friend? Like, first concert, and like, big memory from it.
Involuntary. Like, I didn't choose this, but my parents took me to Bellamy Brothers and Oak Ridge Boys when I was like four or something like that. And my only real lasting memory is it was so loud. I was not prepared for that. Once I, you know, later on in college, I went to a bunch on my own, but that was the first one, I think.
Did you grow up in a big country music household? Like, the Oak Ridge Boys right down the road from where I am right now. So, you know, they're still beloved.
I can't say. It wasn't a lot of country, but we made an exception for Kenny Rogers and the Oak Ridge Boys. It was Western Oklahoma. So there really wasn't any choice in the matter.
Well, I will tell you, not that you asked this, unsolicited music story with Bill Connolly here at this point. I don't think I ever toured with anybody that was more invested in making you better every single night than Kenny Rogers. Like, I was in a band that nobody ever heard of at the time. We opened for Kenny for months, and he sat side stage. And, man, I'm telling you, we would come off stage, and he immediately pull us over and say, hey, tomorrow I'll try this and this and this. And there was one night where we bombed. We were playing in Vegas, back-to-back nights in the same place, and we bombed. And people didn't even applaud after some of the songs. And he came up to us afterwards, and he said, come to my dressing room after the show. I'll tell you everything you did wrong. And he did, and we spent all night. We didn't sleep. We were up for 24 hours. We reworked the entire set. The next night we play in the same place, opening for Kenny. Got a standing ovation, one of the loudest ovations I ever had in my life, playing in front of the same basic crowd. It's just Kenny knew exactly what every audience wanted and how to give it to him. So, you know, there's your unsolicited Kenny Rogers story. Speaking of which, you know how to give everybody what they want when it comes to, I don't know, trying to make projections. I feel for your mentions, but, you know, you go through this process, and this year you did your SP Plus projections. And I should be clear here. You did this based on returning production, recent recruiting, recent history. So there's a lot that goes into it. And you put Ohio State at number one when you ran all the numbers. What makes Ohio State better than Alabama when you actually run these projections?
So the biggest thing that Ohio State has going for them this year is, you know, usually with these teams that are national title contenders, you know, they never rank all that high in my returning production rankings because they always lose guys to the pros, right? And so basically, if Alabama ever ranks like 70th in returning production, they're probably going to win the national title because that's a crazy amount of experience for them. Ohio State ranks 25th. They were right there in the top three last year. They basically looked the part except for two games, you know, against Michigan and against Oregon. They were still very good. They weren't as good as Alabama and Georgia, but they were up there, and they return almost everybody of importance. And those and the guys they lost, they have very, very impressive replacements waiting and ready to go. So that's where they hold the edge. They obviously they have something to prove defensively. They project worse defensively than Alabama and Georgia do, and you know, new coordinator and all that. But they have much more to offer just in terms of overall returning production than teams of that caliber typically do.
So I was hosting our digital NFL draft work, and Mina Kimes made the comment at one point, thank God Georgia won a national championship, because as many as their players that were being drafted in the first round, we would never forgive them if they didn't. But it's funny when you talk about projections, because all I keep thinking about from the Georgia side is, how do you project a defense that has so many different players on it this year?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was we can't really say it was a uniquely successful or uniquely awesome unit, because the whole blue chippers playing amazing defense thing, we kind of saw that when Kirby and Saban were together at Alabama, and then Saban has done it a couple times after Kirby left. So I guess there's a precedent for it, but it was still a ridiculously talented group. And you know, when you recruit like Kirby does and like George does, like they still have Keely Ringo and Nolan Smith and all these other guys who are ridiculously good and ridiculously talented. So even if last year was kind of a unique collection, they're still going to be a top 5 or 10 defense. I think they've kind of earned just that assumption at this point. So they, if the offense can kind of hold up its end of the bargain, maybe get a hair better, I mean, they're going to be right there again.
Which is interesting. We're talking to Bill Connolly. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in on the Paul Feinbaum Show with the projections on ESPN Plus. You should check it out because you have Alabama too, which kind of makes me it makes me chuckle just because I love drama in college football, right? And the thought of Alabama and Georgia just butting heads again, but you know, Georgia gets the national championship. So is this some level of disrespect to Georgia, or is this all about what Alabama's still got in the cupboard and what they've added to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think basically it's just that Alabama returns a little bit more. Obviously, Georgia's defense was a little better than Alabama's, but really you start to look at, you know, the fact that we make Will Anderson Jr. play another year in college, that he couldn't go pro last year, even though he was best player in college football. They have a lot more experience on defense. They still return Bryce Young. There was turnover in the skill core, but I think Jahmyr Gibbs especially addresses that pretty well. They got a couple speedy transfers as well in Harrell and Burton. So, you know, overall, they have a little bit more of last year's team back. And I think that ends up making the difference. From a projection standpoint, that's the biggest thing. And it should be mentioned, those three teams are miles ahead of everybody else in these projections. I mean, number 3 and 4 are about as close as number 4 and 22 or something like that. So it really is kind of three teams versus the field here. But those are definitely two of the three.
I can only think already way too early about the fact that Will Anderson, because he's not a quarterback, is probably going to be sitting there at the 4th or 5th pick in the draft this coming year, and he's only going to turn out to be the best player that gets drafted. You mentioned the moat that exists, and I see Texas A&M down here at 8th in your projections, but according to Nick Saban, they bought their whole recruiting class. So what is A&M missing to make them a top 3 team for you?
I think for me personally, I need to see a little bit more from the offense. Not only, you know, points, which would be lovely. They kind of were kind of short on those at times last year. But just we've seen modernization efforts from Alabama and other teams, and you know, an emphasis on big plays and all the eye candy, the motion, and all these other things that Jimbo Fisher just doesn't seem to like very much. He likes what he does. He's going to run his offense. It's going to be a lot of quick passing. It's going to be a lot of running. They're going to punt on 4th and 1 every time, and it's going to work for them most of the time. But I feel like they're giving up points in the way they go about things. They're not claiming all the points available to them, and that holds them back. You see it with these projections. They're projected 6th defensively. They're right there with Alabama and Georgia on the defensive side of the ball. They're projected 36th on offense, and I can't really. That feels pretty fair to me. Obviously, the quarterback position, if they have an upgrade this year, maybe that helps a little bit. But they still have something to prove offensively. They didn't do every week what they did against Alabama last year, and it cost them.
I think it's interesting, too. You have Tennessee projected at 9th, and that's only interesting to me because in reading Pete Thamel's article about the SEC, and we're going to talk to Pete later, he essentially divides the SEC into 2 tiers, and the top of the bottom half of that tier is Tennessee. But here they sit at 9.
Yep.
Can the Vols take some sort of a jump that puts them back into a different level of national conversation this year?
It's going to be really interesting. I would feel more comfortable if they were about 19th than 9th. That's a little high for me, and I don't really like it all that much, but I get it because on paper their offense was fantastic last year. And it's one of those things where, you know, the way Josh Heupel used tempo, any advantage they find, any matchup advantage they find, they're going to absolutely milk the most out of it. And that, so, you know, against mediocre defenses, they'll score 50 points. If they don't have a matchup advantage, they just go 3 and out in about 8 seconds, and it costs their defense quite a bit. So they need a little bit more balance there. But they are going to have, you know, they had a year under Heupel now. Hendon Hooker theoretically starts the year as the starter and not on the bench. They have an experienced skill core, very good offensive line, I think. They got a lot to offer here. And like I said, 15 to 20 sounds better to me than 9th, but I mean, I get it. If their defense is top 30 or 40, that's a very, very solid football team right there.
I said it last year, Tennessee by the end of the year felt like you were playing somebody in a video game where they were just running the same play against you over and over and over again. And when it worked, you couldn't stop it. Bill, great work as always. I pray for your mentions already. Anytime you make projections, college football fans are nothing if not fair and reasonable in their response to it.
Of course.
I'm sure it's been a delight for you, but thanks for coming on with me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take care.
check out the article. It's out on ESPN Plus. It's the College Football Updated SP Plus preseason projections for 2022. Easy for me to say. 855-242-7285. You guys are mad at each other. You guys are mad at Jimbo. You're mad at Saban. We'll let all of you get it off your chest coming up. That's 855-242-7285. More of your calls coming up on the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz filling in.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
A Feinbaum Show. Jason Fitz filling in for Paul. You guys hanging out with me. 855-242-7285. That's how you get in on the fun. Having a great time. Bob Dylan, 81, says today is the 81st birthday of Bob Dylan, which in rock star years is like 232. I just saw that the Rolling Stones are about to do another tour too, and I'm like, man, I don't know how. Like, kudos to them. A little bit of the music fun coming for any of you guys that don't know my background. I toured in country music for a very long time, so we're having a little fun with that, asking you guys to tell me your first concert anytime we take a call, so be ready for that one. Art in Birmingham, Alabama. Art, what's your first concert, brother?
Hey, buddy. Hey, this is awesome. Thank you for taking my call, and I have to say, this is tough coming off Paul Feinbaum. You know, but I really think you're awesome, and you really fit in perfect.
Thanks, man.
But okay, my first concert is, well, you might know, I always called him Bradley. And so we were out of class, and we were participating in extra liquor. And he said, let's see a show. And we go out in the den, and there's a broken, one of those old square TVs, you know, that you know them. And the glass was broken, and it was jagged, and it, you know, and there was a shoebox in the TV, and the Grateful Dead was playing. You could see the crowd and their set. It was awesome.
Man, Grateful Dead. That's awesome.
And then every so often he'd have to like push on the TV, and they'd come back in. It was great. I mean, he was a stout. Musician type of guy. I think he was truly into country music. Man, I didn't know him that well, but a memorable moment.
That's a really cool story. I appreciate you sharing it, and I appreciate Art the kind words. You're right. It is not easy to fill in for the great Paul Feinbaum. I'll tell you a story about the first time I ever met Paul in my life later in the week. It's risque. That's all I'm saying. It's risque. That's a tease for later in the week. And I haven't given you my first concert yet. We will do all of that. But you guys are fired up as I started the show today. Basically asking why everybody's scared and why the name, image, likeness thing seems to have everybody afraid of competition and why the scheduling conversation seems to have everybody afraid of competition. And that has everybody chiming in with all sorts of ideas and all sorts of anger about everything that's going on. So let's get some more of those name, image, likeness thoughts. Bob in Fort Worth. Bob, appreciate you calling. Before you give me your thoughts on NIL, what was your first concert, my friend?
Well, my first full-blown concert that I got in a car and drove to was Heart.
Oh, man. That is an awesome answer. That is. Were they great? Tell me Heart was spectacular.
They were spectacular, and I hadn't drunk a thing in there, but I felt better after I left.
I'm telling you, man, she could sing. It, like, there's a difference. So we always used to say on the road, she can sing, and then there's she can sing. Like, she could sing. Like, oh, my God, that was, whew, you got me fired up, Bob. All right, now go ahead and give me your name, image, like this, thoughts, my friend.
Well, all these people squalling, and you stop me and tell me if I'm wrong. Name, image, and likeness is not supposed to have anything to do with the school. Am I correct?
Yeah. Well, name, image, likeness, the school isn't handing out the check, correct. But, so the school isn't the one actually writing the check, correct.
I mean, but down to it, it's supposed to be between a player and some company or mom-and-pop grocery store on the corner or something.
Right.
I mean, that's the basis of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So why is Satan sitting up there and saying, well, we're going to put our deal so everybody gets paid the same?
I think what happened is through this process, well, I don't think. I mean, what has happened through this process is donors for certain schools have come together and created a way where they're paying kids under the presumption.
I understand that.
Okay.
I understand that. But, you know, everybody jumped on Jimbo. Well, what do you mean you don't know what's going on? Well, the way I understand the way this thing's supposed to work, he's not supposed to know what's going on.
There's a fine line between how much coaches are supposed to know, because they're supposed to be making sure that the kids, you know, they're looking out for the kids, I think. You know, in some schools, you file the name, image, likeness deal through the school to help track everything. But, yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, how would you have it handled then?
Well, I don't think there's any way to handle it. And the only people you hear hollering about equity and this and that is the schools that are not going to be able to keep up. You know,
and it's
a shame, but Alabama ain't going to be able to keep up with A&M in name, image, and likeness. Ain't happening. Ain't going to happen. No way possible. Because you could bankrupt the state of Alabama and not be able to come up with the money that A&M can. And that's just fact. And I understand, you know, Nick, he's all upset because he's always had it his way. Well, things are changing, and he's not going to always get all the best players now. And when he's hollering about equity, the closest thing Nick Saban has ever been to equity was when he was coach at Miami. And he didn't do so hot then when it was all equity.
I think.
I mean, he.
Go ahead, Bob.
It fascinates me. He's always been on top, and everybody else is, you know. And then all of a sudden, and like you said a while ago, you know, he's punching down. Well, he's punching down for a reason. He's punching down because he's nervous, and he sees it slipping away. That he's not going to be able to get whoever he wants when he wants, and that's just going to be the future of college football.
Well, and you're not wrong, Bob. Thanks for the call, man. I really appreciate it, and I hear a lot of what you're saying. The only encouragement I would get, because you're right, for anybody that has it twisted any other way, there's more money in Texas than Alabama, and this is all about fear. So I think Bob is 100% right when he talks about, this isn't about today. This is about the landscape 3, 4, 5 years from now. And that's a landscape that Nick Saban had figured out. And, you know, if you're Nick Saban, you're looking at it saying, okay, I've got to send a message. I think part of what Nick Saban was doing in the process of his interview, as some smart college football people have pointed out, was he's letting the donors know, okay, you're going to have to bring extra checkbooks. We're going to need more money, but you're not going to win that money race. So now the question becomes, what do you do about it? And that's going to be really interesting. The only thing I'd say is every single former player I've talked to that I work with around ESPN, everybody I've talked to that has played college football, and obviously I'm 5'9 and a half, 165 pounds. I did not play college football. Every single former player I've talked to has said, hey, Nothing gets bigger to any of these recruits than the opportunity to play on Sundays. So for some schools, if you're Memphis, you're not going to be able to write a check big enough that's going to suddenly get consistent NFL talent all over your roster. You might get one here or there. There are exceptions to every rule. But if you're Alabama, your big hope has to be that you can give the pitch that, hey, you can win so much better here. You can go to Sundays so much easier here. That's just a tougher and tougher thing to be able to sell if the other teams that are also sending a ton of people to the pros are also offering more money. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Some of you guys have some ideas on what should be done, how it gets fixed, and you want to chime in, 855-242-7285. More of your calls coming up, plus more of your thoughts on your first concert on the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz filling in for Paul.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Paul Feinbaum Show. Jason Fitz sitting in for Paul. 855-242-7285. That's the way you get in on the fun. You guys are fired up, which I love. This is why I just love covering the SEC. I'm just going to be honest with you. College football in general. People always ask me what my favorite sport is. I'm an NFL fan. I'm an NFL junkie. You guys, if you've ever checked me out on ESPN, know that I'm a massive, diehard, lifelong Raiders fan. The Raiders are life for me. My favorite sport to cover? College football. Two reasons. I don't have any skin in the game. I don't care who wins or loses. And also, most importantly, I love every ounce of the pageantry. So what I love is that anytime I praise a Big Ten team, SEC fans tell me that I'm awful and I'm biased. And anytime I praise the SEC, then Big Ten fans tell me that I'm biased. So that's just what happens as we run through the whole process. And that's me playing the fiddle. I was an autumn wind. You know, it's the Raiders theme. They asked me to play it. I went in there and did that on ESPN campus one day. Don't tell the bosses. Okay, 855-242-7285. Remember, we start with what your first concert was. I'll tell you quickly. Mine was Bon Jovi, Skid Row. Okay, so I was a little kid. I know. I played country music. I lived in Nashville for 20-plus years, but I grew up a little kid that was a hair metal fan. I'm not even ashamed of it. So it's Skid Row opening for Bon Jovi, right? And I remember two things very distinctly. One, Sebastian Bach came running out on stage for the first song, and he said, "Hello, Seattle, Washington." We were in Scarborough, Maine. And he said, "Hello, Seattle, Washington," or wherever the F we are. That was how he started the whole show. Crowd booed him off stage, which I remembered my entire life. I was always worried we would say the wrong city name, which we did in Buffalo. The stage manager had accidentally put the set list out, and it said Cleveland, Ohio on the top of it. So he did the ultimate Family Guy. Neil Perry of the band Perry went out to the stage and he's like, "Hello, Cleveland!" We were in Buffalo. The other thing that I remember about that is the first song was, it was Lay Your Hands on Me for Bon Jovi. And Richie Sambora blew up in what I now know is called a toaster. It's this thing that pops you out from under the stage. You land on the stage, smoke's flying up everywhere. I was this little classical musician at the time and I looked at it and I said, that is cooler than anything I do. And so Richie Sambora, every night that I didn't feel like going out there and playing If I Die Young and didn't feel like playing the same song for the 200th time that year, I would think, man, there's some 11-year-old kid. And I may never be Richie Sambora, but there's an 11-year-old kid out in that crowd that's never been to a concert before, and he's going to remember this night for the rest of his life. That's what I always remembered. I tell you that story because last year, a little over a year ago, when the draft was in Cleveland, I got the chance to sit down and do an interview with Richie Sambora. He turned out to be the nicest guy. We're now buddies. And every time I get a text from Richie Sambora, I sit there and say, the 11-year-old kid in me goes absolutely nuts over it. That's why I love first concert stories, and I want yours, along with all of your thoughts on the Saban-Jimbo drama and everything going on across the landscape. Now, earlier, there was a conversation about what to do with scheduling, what the future of the SEC looks like. John in North Carolina wants to chime in on that conversation. John, you got to start me with your first concert, though. John, what was the first concert you went to?
1972 Chicago.
Oh, Chicago? That is, what was I it remember, amazing?
What I remember most about it was the guy on the trombone came out in encore with it. He pulled his shirt off, and the damn ladies went crazy.
Yeah, well, it's a, I always say, hey, with the, like, the new kids on the block still tour, they take their shirts off. I'm like, I would if I had abs like that at that age too. So give me your thoughts on college football, John. I know you've been hanging on. What you want to talk about?
Well, everybody says they're going to a pod. If it was me, I'd make it a 10-game schedule, keep the divisions, and move Alabama, Auburn to the East. I'm an Alabama-centric guy, and so I'd keep LSU as a permanent crossover. But that's not going to happen. What's probably going to happen is a 9-game schedule, and with 4 pods, it works out perfect. But you gotta think of what rivalries you want to keep. And obviously, you want to keep the Iron Bowl, the Egg Bowl. You want to rekindle Texas A&M and Texas, and you want to keep Texas Oklahoma. I want to keep the outdoor cocktail party between Georgia and Florida. I'd like to keep Auburn and Georgia as the oldest rivalry in the South. So that being said, I would put one pod as Texas A&M, and then the 2 old Big 8 schools in Oklahoma and Missouri come over with in mind that keeping the Egg Bowl and LSU Ole Miss. You pull down Arkansas, you got a good convenient little pod there, and then you go with Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, and Florida, which Paul says is not going to happen, and then that leaves you South Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt. And then what you have to do with the pods is split to a Group A and a Group B. And so every year a team would play, you make A&M in Texas an A and a B. So every team would play every year, if they're not in their pod, would play a Texas school. Same thing with Alabama. You'd play Alabama or Auburn. You'd play a Mississippi school. You'd play either Georgia or Florida. You play either Tennessee or Vandy or Kentucky and South Carolina if you're not in that pod, and you split it up. And being Alabama-centric, I'd want LSU 1 year and Tennessee the other, and work it out that way. But if you're not in the Alabama-Florida-Georgia pod, every year you're going to be playing Alabama-Florida or Georgia-Auburn, and you just work your way down. And you could have, you know, Alabama, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma on your schedule, and then the next year you have Auburn, Georgia, Arkansas, and LSU on your schedule, or Arkansas and A&M on your schedule.
But you're so making
– I think it's doable, and that way you play everybody 2 years, you get to everybody's stadium every 4 years, and you keep the Iron Bowl, you keep the outdoor cocktail party, you keep Auburn, Georgia – you keep the Egg Bowl, you keep LSU and Ole Miss, you rekindle Auburn and Florida, you rekindle Texas A&M, you keep Oklahoma and Texas, and you go from there.
And the only problem with that, though, John, is like you're making – because not all of those pods are equal in their strength of pod, right? So you're making – if you're requiring everybody in each of those pods to play each other – some of those pods are substantially easier than others. So how have you made the path to a national championship more attainable for the best teams in the SEC?
Well, the 12-team playoff is going to solve that problem. Say you're in a weaker pod. Say you're in a weaker pod. Well, you're outside your pod when you're outside your pod, and say your draw is Texas and Oklahoma and LSU and Alabama and Florida, that's not easy either.
No, but if you're – I guess – and thanks for the call, John. I think what we have to remember, all of this is about two things, the playoffs and money, right? And so what really hits me when you talk about that pod system is while it serves the concept of rivalry, which I totally understand and appreciate, like that's a big part of why things matter. I mean, the jokes are real, and we all know it. If you've ever lived in SEC country, there are certain weekends your friends don't schedule weddings, and you know it. You know it because those rivalries matter that stinking much, and I don't want to take anything away from that, but I just keep thinking about your pod concept and asking, how does it make it easier for Alabama to get to the national championship? The goal of the SEC is not just to make as much money as possible. It's also to make sure that they have as many playoff teams in the college football playoff as possible, and the presumption that expansion is just going to be agreed upon, I don't think is an easy or safe one. I mean, I talk to Heather Dinich about it all the time, and the number of different people that have different views on it and different ways that they think that it should go and different TV partners that could or couldn't be involved. Like, you're banking on doing a pod system with the concept that a 12-team playoff will suddenly be there, and it will still benefit the SEC. I don't know that I want to let a college football committee suddenly have to be smart enough to come in and decide that this pod system created a more difficult environment for multiple teams in the SEC, so they deserve to be viewed more favorably than, let's say, the way the Big 12 does their schedule or the way that the Big 10 does their schedule. And we've seen the Pac-12 get rid of divisions, and we're seeing this across the landscape. The concept is, how do I, no longer about who wins what division and what serves what rivalry. It's, how do I make sure that I have one team standing with the best possible resume that can get me into the college football playoff? That's all I think anybody is worried about, and frankly, should be worried about, because that's where the profile comes from. That's where the big money comes from, and that's where the opportunity to continue to say we are the best comes from. It doesn't really come from just having the best team. It also comes from having a national championship. 855-242-7285. We'll take more of your calls on your thoughts on college football, plus, of course, your first concert. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz, sitting in for Paul.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Paul Feinbaum Show. 855-242-7285. You know, I knew I'd screw up the phone number at some point today. I finally got to it. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in for Paul. By the way, if you've had a good time at all hanging out with me, I would ask you, I'll be with you all week, so keep hanging out with me all week. And also, be sure to check out Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern. That's where you can usually find me and Sarah Spain hanging out. So if you've had a good time, keep hanging out with us. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Jason Fitz. Easy to get to me there, or on Instagram under the same thing. If you're into any of those sorts of things, you guys are chiming in on all the college football takes. Remember, it starts with, what was your first concert? That is an important part of where it starts. Once we know that piece of it, then we can go from there. Obviously, everybody's super fired up as they try and figure out how to wade these waters that have Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher yelling at each other about everything, really, at this point. And let me just say that SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey had an opportunity to step in and make a definitive statement, and really, I don't think did. It was a bit of a, hey, this isn't sportsmanlike, and we all need to figure out how to work together. Very kumbaya. I think it's fair to question whether the treatment would have been the same of a lesser name coach from a lesser brand school in this entire argument, as these are the two adults in the room. Remember that. Nathan in College Station wanting to chime in. I appreciate it. I can't imagine where you fall on this issue being from College Station, but Nathan, most importantly, first off, what was your first concert?
In 1980, lazy summer afternoon, went to San Marcos, Texas, saw a little band called Ace and the Whole Band, and just so happened that George Strait was George Strait's band before he became somebody. Oh, and then later, man, that evening, went to San Antonio and saw AC/DC, Back in Black, at the Joe and Harry Freeman Coliseum. It was a great day.
Oh, man, you saw Strait and AC/DC in the same day. That's legend status, Nathan. That's awesome. All right, give me your college football take. What's going on?
So, I just was wondering if anybody heard the comments by Jimbo today that he went and checked with his compliance department because of all this uproar. That out of 11 early enrollees, only one person has an NIL deal. And so, and what I think why Jimbo went kind of ape crazy on him is because he made it personal. Nobody seems to be talking about that. Saban said that every player on the team was bought. So that means it's before NIL was even started that he accused Jimbo Fisher of buying players. And I think that's what kind of broke the camel's back with Jimbo. And for all these people that say that, why go to College Station? What's in College Station? Did you know that A&M has the largest enrollment of a university in the United States with over 70,000 people? I think it's a slap in the face to the community and to the students. And I think Jimbo took it personally that Saban was calling his players lawbreakers. And for legend, that guy's family tree must not fork. That's all I got to say.
Oh, thanks for the call, Nathan. And I'll address a couple of things. Number one, I've played College Station plenty of times in my country music career. It is a great place. I've had a blast at College Station. I got nothing but, and frankly, if you've ever gone through most of these towns in the South, most of them are smaller towns that live, eat, and breathe football. I mean, you can make the argument why go to and insert almost any school there if it's not your particular cup of tea. And for a lot of people that want to live in different areas, you know, that's That's just a common part of conversation. So I put no weight to the why go there conversation. To your point, I think that's why Nick Saban walked it back a little bit the next day, or tried to walk it back, but didn't even do a particularly good job of it. Both men got personal. And look, again, these are educators. These are teachers. That's what they're paid to do. As college football coaches, they are paid by a school, so they represent the school. So you got to rise above. And we all know, if you've ever had kids, I don't have kids, but I was a kid once. And we all know the argument of like, hey, the clapback's still going to get you in trouble. Both of these adults handled their situations flat out poorly. I don't think that that's a hot take. And, you know, at some point you've got to look around and say, okay, how are we going to handle this? And when are we going to ask for more? That's what I keep saying. Ask for more. Joby in Alabama. Joby, what you got, man? Thanks for calling the show. What was your first concert?
My first concert was Huey Lewis and the News.
So good. Was it good? Tell me it was amazing.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. There was one point where somebody threw something up on the stage, and they stopped the concert and said, if you want us to leave, and everybody turned on that individual and kind of ushered them out of the crowd. So it was kind of cool.
That's amazing.
It was a great concert. Great band.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that.
They have in the background. Awesome. Awesome.
That's amazing. All right, so give me your college football thoughts.
I don't want to badmouth David because he just doesn't know. A lot of people just don't know about A&M. They're not very educated about A&M. They're not very educated about Jimbo, to be honest. Jimbo is not new to recruiting. He had a top six or seven class the last 4 years. He's not. This is not his first number one class overall. He's not immune. I mean, he's not. He's had a national championship. He's no slouch. He knows what he's doing. And NIL aside, he still recruits good players, incredible players. That being said, I think anybody that knew about last year knows that A&M was not an 8-4 team. They finished 8-4, but their starting quarterback fell injured in the second game of the year, and the guy that came in to replace him, he just wasn't up to par. He didn't meet their expectations, and Jimbo was the one to answer. He had to answer to that. So he's got an answer to this now that he's got better talent, better quarterbacks. But the second point is the university. It's no small university. I lived in Tennessee and I've lived in Alabama, and I've talked to people I've had people ask me, how big is the University of A&M? Isn't it pretty small? A guy in Tennessee thought it was smaller than Vanderbilt. And I said, you might be surprised to know that it's the largest university in the SEC. And now it's the largest university in the nation, just ahead of Central Florida. Most people don't know that. And then the facilities. The facilities, are they second to none? I don't know, but they're second to not very many. And are they second to Alabama? Maybe you can answer that. Maybe you've seen both facilities. I suspect that they're not second to Alabama. And then the final point is game day. You said you've been at College Station a few times to perform. I don't know if you've been to game day in College Station. Game day in College Station, I'll put it this way. Everybody loves their own game day. Everybody's proud of their own game day. Everybody has things they love about, they like the different aspects of their game day. I've talked to people who have gone to game day in College Station who aren't Aggie fans. They go to see their team play against A&M, and they report back that they are in awe of not just the fan base, but the facilities, the game day experience, everything about it.
Yeah,
it's
Joby,
like
I think you're right.
And,
I'm sorry I got to cut you off. We're up against it. I think you're right about a lot of what you're saying, and it leads me to a real solution to some of this conversation that I think everybody needs to hear, and I'll tell you that in a minute. As somebody that has no skin in the game for either of these teams, I think there's an obvious point that both sides of this conversation have completely missed on. I'll give you that. Plus, you guys can keep chiming in, 855-242-7285. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show. Jason Fitz filling in.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.